Yet again, humanity is in the X-Men's debt.
Cyclops still won't let me fly the jet.
The last will and testament of Charles Francis.
He's here!
Apocalypse.
To me, my X-Men. Welcome back, my friends. It is I, Rich Filiberto, DM Philly, your friendly neighborhood podcaster. Back with you again for an extra X-Men 97 podcast this week. We're back after episode 7, Bright Eyes. And I am very excited to be joined today by my man, the one and only Jason Reed. Jason, how are you doing, man?
I'm good, sugar. I'm good. Rich, I'm ecstatic that you decided to bring me on here. You know, like I told you pre-show, I've missed talking regularly about Marvel, about, you know, superhero stuff. So I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to get into this all. And this episode in particular is a really jam-packed one, so I'm excited to get into all of it.
Yeah, we got a lot to get into. For, you know, most of the folks here are very much coming with us from our alma mater of post-show recaps. But for anybody not familiar with Jason, he covered a bunch of the Marvel properties over on Disney and the films over the last couple of years. And you and I have not talked a bunch of Marvel comics. We've done a little bit of podcasting about Cobra Kai. So I'm super psyched to like pick your brain about this. I thought you carried that torch magnificently over at PSR. I'm just kind of circling back on like some Loki coverage now. But part of like what I've been talking to all the guests about as I'm having folks in week after week is X-Men 97. We're like picking back up this classic animated series. It was such a big deal for so many of us once upon a time. And I'm just kind of curious, like your history with the X-Men, specifically the animated series, and what this show has been like for you getting it on the air this year.
So, I mean, I think like a lot of people, the original X-Men animated series was my first like foray into the X-Men. It was my first like knowledge of the X-Men. It was my first impression of the X-Men. So that animated series is everything to me. When this was announced that this was actually even just happening, X-Men 97, I went back and watched the whole series with my daughter, who is, you know, was like 13 at the time. So that was really an important moment for me, watching that series back, which was the first time I watched it. I mean, big ups to Disney Plus that they have made this all available and easy to find, because it was such a fun journey to go through. And it's weird. Anytime you go back to things that you watched as a kid and you rewatch it, it's just almost like, yeah, some of it was like, wow, that happened. Like, I totally forgot about the Bishop, the Storm, Wolverine alternate timeline they touched on in that series, which was so interesting and fun. We actually see moments of that in the intro to this. I'm hoping at some point we touch back on that. Like in the opening sequence, we have a shot of Bishop, Wolverine, and Storm in those get-ups. I'm like, are we gonna come back to that? But yes. Original X-Men was a big moment, was a big touchstone in my life, and the introduction of superheroes. So it was interesting that this was coming back. And as I watched the first episodes of this, it's great to see that they didn't just copy the formula. They didn't just say, okay, this is a show for kids. We're not going to be too heavy. We're going to lightly slide people into things about prejudice and you know, accepting people. They're going full bore. They're saying this is a series for those kids that were in the 90s. Now we're going to update it to a more mature theme, because I know those people are coming with us. I think that was a great idea, and I love how they're not pulling any punches with any of the themes they're going in on. They're going hard on a lot of these themes and being way more adult about it than they were in the previous series.
Oh yeah, no joke. It's always wild. The whole like consolidation of these shows on Disney Plus, it is kind of wild going back to it. There's so many animated series on Disney specifically that were ones that I grew up with, Gargoyles. And you do go back like, oh my God, some of this stuff is so cringe. And some of it's as good as you remember. And then there's all the stuff that like totally got past you. And you're like, my God, some of these plot lines. But I love the generational note that you're talking about, being able to watch it with your kid. That's really awesome to be able to pass this stuff forward. It's part of, I think, what is so cool about comics in the modern age and why it's been such a kind of powerful medium across cinema over the last 20 years. There is this generational element of the stuff that we grew up with and being able to kind of pass it on. Certainly not my kid, but last week I had my friend Taylor Ball go back and watch the first 5 episodes of this as somebody that did not know the X-Men and wasn't precious about them at all. And she was totally won over and kind of captivated by the first half of X-Men 97. And to your point, I mean, Kevin and I are talking about it week after week, but the show just has such a potent and powerful point of view, and they are not pulling any punches in terms of the way they're approaching this material and the ideas that, like, high ideas that they're kind of approaching with all of it. So I love it that you're able to sit down with, like, your 13-year-old daughter and watch this show and kind of, like, pay that all forward. It feels like such an important show in the moment as we're in 2024. I've certainly, like, said plenty about that, but I'd love to, like, just stop down a little bit and hear from, like, some of your favorites. Like, as I'm getting people in week after week, I'm always curious, like, what's your ideal X-Men roster, right? What's, like, the five-man, like, lineup that you could put on a cover that you're just like, yes, these are my people right here.
I think for me, it's Gambit has always been a favorite of mine. I don't think anyone would be shocked by that. He was just this cool bad boy guy that didn't take any ish from anyone, and he was always a very cool guy. Of course, Wolverine. I think growing up in that original X-Men, you know, cartoon, you can't help but have Wolverine be one of your favorite X-Men.
Yeah, I stan Wolverine. He's just so cool. And he was so cool. And I think for most, like, teenage boys, like adolescent boys, how could you not love Wolverine? He's built for us, you know?
Yeah, 100%. He's all that teenage aggression that you always wanted to get out. That's who Wolverine is. So Wolverine, Gambit, Rogue is a powerhouse. When you don't have, like, a powerhouse like a Juggernaut, Rogue is that compact super strength X-Man that you can always have that's a Superman level threat. Like, as you and Kev talked about, she crumpled that facility up, that's built for the Hulk. She opened it up like it was nothing. So I think you gotta have Rogue, Gambit, Wolverine. I put Nightcrawler in there.
Oh yeah.
As a really fundamental piece of the team who doesn't only bring his abilities but brings heart to the team. I'll say that. I mean, they all bring heart, but Nightcrawler is definitely up there. And then I'll put Jean Grey as kind of like my big overall powerhouse in there to kind of fill out the roster of my five person team.
I love this crew. I love Jean so much, man. I feel like Jean is one of these characters I'm waiting to kind of get the big, like, character-focused episode this season. We obviously have this three-part finale that we're driving into, and I'm so curious how they're going to kind of balance it across the character arcs, because they've done such a good job with these really focused episodes across the first seven that we got this season. But there are a couple of notables, like your Jean Greys and your Wolverines, that haven't gotten a ton of attention yet. So I'm curious to see what that looks like, but I love that roster. Marvel in general, Jason, you know, you've been talking about it over the last couple of years. There's, like, certainly everybody's mileage is all over the place. Like, I've been talking to folks over the last couple of months that really love a lot of the more recent projects. I had so much fun with the Marvels. I really kind of hate how beat up it got in the court of public opinion. You know, Iman Vellani is, like, just a gem. She's just wonderful. And that movie felt really fun to me, if not as powerful as some of the more serious MCU fare. But where are you at, like, in general with the MCU these days?
Listen, I'm a very optimistic person, right? In general, I like most of the output that Marvel has put out, even the more recent fare. I've never been a Marvel hater, I would say. Mm-hmm. Yes, they definitely had some low spots, Eternals being one of them, for sure. And that's a recent, like, blip. A lot of people didn't like She-Hulk. I loved She-Hulk. She-Hulk was so much fun. Yes, it definitely had its issues. That was the first show that Sasha Joseph and I talked about over on Post Show Recaps. And yeah, there were definitely a lot of low points, but there was a lot of fun in there too. I feel like after Endgame, anything that came after Endgame, people were like, oh, it's not Endgame though. It will never be Endgame. There will never be anything like Endgame. So you have to adjust your expectations, adjust your requirements for what you find fun. Does it tickle your funny bone? Is it a good time? I think that's what you need to worry about. And everything that Marvel's put out mostly has been that. Like you said, the Marvels was fantastic. One of my top films that's not a Avengers level film is Captain America Civil War. That was such a great property. It was intrigue, it was suspense, it was a thriller. So for all of that, you know, that was one of my top favorite properties. But something like a Shang-Chi, which is so different and not really tapped into the bigger tapestry of it all, is also a really fun time for me. So I'm really kind of all over the board with properties. And I think one of the movies that has aged the poorest, Incredible Hulk, one of my top 10 Marvel movies.
I love hearing you say that. Honestly, like, it's a bit of a gem that's really, like, it's oft overlooked as we go back through that whole original run of Marvel stuff. And Civil War, one of my, like, absolute favorites. I think they just did such a good job rolling out all these new characters and balancing the kind of tone of it and all of the character attention. I don't know. I feel like Civil War is a bit of a masterclass in how to run one of these superhero movies. So I feel that. I've had a lot of fun with a lot of the Marvel stuff. I'm only just kind of circling back to season two of Loki, and because I was like a little bit burned out on it, feeling a little bit calloused. Mm-hmm. But I like to be optimistic as well, Jason. Like, I want to show up to this stuff to have a good time. And so I really had a lot of fun with Loki season two, and I'm starting to get very fired up about Marvel again, knowing that we got these Deadpool trailers dropping. And, you know, Josh was here a couple of weeks ago talking about how 2024 feels in certain ways poised to be like the year of the mutant. And that's kind of exciting. I think the X-Men is like the shot of steroids that the MCU may well need right now. So to X-Men 97, we got 7 episodes. We're like running right down the line. You and I have been talking about when we were going to get together since the beginning of the season, but how are you feeling about it? Like, where do you want to start? There's just so much for us to talk about, really.
I'm feeling great about it. And you mentioned that these episodes have been so... They're not singularly character focused. I can remember in the original anime series, we had so many episodes that were focused just on one hero, and I'm missing that a little bit. Like you said, like I think you mentioned, we haven't gotten a lot of touch on Wolverine. Wolverine's been a little bit of comedic, nature a little bit. He's got these one liners he throws out, like in this episode he's like, did what I would have liked to do. And then we had the kiss between him and Jean a couple episodes ago that has not been touched on really at all, which is a major development in that story. But otherwise, I felt like coming into X-Men 97, I thought Wolverine was going to be a major focus, because I mean, the original series is really what threw Wolverine into prominence, and ever since then he's been this major figure for Marvel, but he's really been kind of in the background of these stories. And Wolverine and Cyclops and Jean have been at the kind of the forefront. So I think that relationship also is very interesting. It took another turn in this episode where we're like, we're walking through the temple of all of our dead brethren. And we're like, hey, by the way, I'm really sorry about all the cheating I did on you psychically with Madeline. She's like, oh, no big deal. And then it's like, oh, I got another presence. Madeline, is that you? No. Oh, he's bummed. It's not Madeline. But I think that's very interesting. There was so much here that we can touch on, but I don't know where you want to start exactly. Like, you leave me a little bit about what you want to talk about.
Sure. As you talk about the Gene and the Cyclops and the Logan of it all, I love what they're doing here. You know, Kevin and I have like beat up on the love triangle a little bit on the main pod, because they just did so much with it. Wolverine has dominated so much of the like X-Men main kind of marquee fare over the last 20 years. I get kind of holding him back, especially when we're getting a Marvel movie this year that's got Wolverine in the titles, which I just can't get over, to get him in the yellow suit leaping out of this show in like an R-rated film. It's going to be kind of wild to see that come to fruition. But I feel you. They've really been holding him back and just kind of focusing in on the relationship with Morph. They are using him to comedic effect with the little one-liners. I'm like waiting to hear more from Cal Dodd every episode. And I wonder, as we're driving into this final three, how big it's going to be. Kevin, I speculated a little bit as we get the Emma Frost kind of diamond form, the fallout from the whole kind of Madeline Pryor psychic love affair this episode, that it feels to me like this relationship of Jean and Scott is going to be broken and dissolved by the end of the season. And we're pushing towards maybe the Scott and Emma of it all. And I just wonder, as like a Wolverine fan, part of me really loves Wolverine's like love for Jean Grey. And I don't know if like that's just the rose colored glasses of my youth and the nostalgia for the classic animated series. Like, I know we look at like the original X-Men trilogies and X3 is like often lambasted as the worst one, but I don't care, man. I love that final scene. scene of like the Golden Gate Bridge and Wolverine getting like shredded apart. I remember watching it in theaters being like, I can't believe this is happening. And it's really good effects for whatever it's worth. While that movie is like flawed, I like that story. I like the relationship between them. Jean waking up with Wolverine a couple of episodes and him like, look what you mean to me, Jean. And she was so kind of taken by that. This is like a relationship that I could get on board with. And I'm just kind of curious if I'm alone, if I'm on an island with this one, Jason.
With Wolverine and Jean of it all, I can even see there being a world where, like, let's say we get a time jump to season two, where we're in a situation where we're in the mansion with Wolverine and Jean being one couple and Scott and Emma also being in the mansion as another couple. There's been so much dramatic tension over the years in comics, for sure, in that dynamic where Jean has to be around Scott and Emma as they're being all schmoopy doopy. And, you know, I think about the more recent X-Men comics where there's this weird triangle quadrangle of Scott, Emma, Wolverine, and Jean it's been really weird in those comics and not really well defined, but there's definitely something going on. There's like an open relationship between all those people, and that's an interesting dynamic to delve into. I think that would be really fun to see in a season two where we get all those personalities and all those characters mingling, and how awkward it would be for all that to be going on in the same area.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th. And it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger. Definitely some disgust.
Rose!
And I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Welcome to the Snapple Market Auditory Experience. Close your eyes. Imagine you're walking into your neighborhood store. You make your way to the back and reach for your favorite Snapple flavor. You can't wait. You take a sip. Whoa, that's a lot of flavor. Mmm, what flavor are you holding? Now open your eyes and check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavorful Snapple near you.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
I feel you, man. I mean, I think that's part of the kind of like the contemporary X-Men and like the aging up of the X-Men to kind of beat the time that they are arriving in, and the kind of time of the world that we find ourselves in now. You and I were talking a little bit before we started recording, and Kevin and I didn't delve into it much, but this whole storyline that we explore this episode with Roberto and Jubilee of going to his mom and the whole reveal, I'm a mutant. And we get this huge kind of collective sigh of relief at his mother's acceptance. Yeah. Like, finally, oh, thank God. I'm so glad you're telling me. And she says so much of the right thing. She has these really empowering ideas. A mother always knows, Roberto. Your father and I, we thought it was your secret to tell. We didn't want to like push that on you. We didn't want to push this reveal onto you before you were ready for it. And when we look at those original X-Men Fox movies, obviously like the Iceman scene is so widely reflected on as this real metaphor for coming out and the LGBTQ experience in the U.S., it's like you know, it's always been kind of built in, the idea of these disenfranchised groups that are able to see themselves through the X-Men. But as we look at the X-Men in the 21st century in 2024, they're as like queer as they have ever been at this point. And to the point of like open relationships and poly relationships being at the forefront and very prominent. This felt to me like a really contemporary way to approach this idea, because it's just so complicated, Jason. Like, in one hand, she's saying all the right things, and then on the other, she's like completely toxic and like, oh yeah, we're gonna have to keep this completely secret and hidden. We got to worry about the shareholders. Like, go figure, the bad guy was capitalism all along, right?
Yeah. And I think the word for this episode is optics, right? Everyone is worried about optics in regards to, you know, the mutants, how they're going to handle the fallout of a lot of their own being killed, what is deemed as acceptable to the outside world as to how you handle that. And also with Roberto's mom being like, I'm worried about the optics of what this is going to look like to our company. And we have to remember, this show is, you know, this takes place in our timeline of the 90s, right? It's definitely not as accepted as it is now back in the 90s. So that was very interesting to see. And her tech kind of take this turn of like this loving mother into them worry being a businesswoman and worrying about how the shareholders are going to react to Roberto being a mutant. Like, you could change mutants to gay and this would be the same exact conversation being happening. And I love the fact, because, you know, back in the 90s you know, anime series, it was all about racial prejudice and the mutant plight being kind of taking that form. But this is about, we've updated to be like the LGBTQ prejudice as well. Like, are we worried about how people are going to react to you being gay? Are you being, you know, any other type of classification identification? I think that was a very interesting turn for that plot to take. I didn't see it coming. I didn't even think we're going to be like, you know, visiting Roberto's family issue in this episode. I thought we had so much to take care of, but we had this little side mission of Jubilee and Roberto, and it was so powerful, the moment where, you know, she just makes that turn and it's like, oh, you know, she understands, she has this love for her son, but then the love for her company kind of supersedes that.
Yeah, optics really is the word of the hour. It's very well put, right? And I had talked about it a bit with Kevin, and it's so tough because I reflect on it afterwards. But there is this notion of like, when you want to affect change, how do you get the populace behind you, right? And how do you kind of like, how do you like supercharge the kind of zeitgeist to follow you in that way? Like, optics does matter on a large political stage. But the problem is that at that point, you start to subvert the morality and the actual ethics of the decision making, and what is right and wrong become deprioritized in terms of how you react to things. I really was surprised about it as well. I didn't expect that we would go this deep into it, especially with a character like Roberto da Costa, who so often in the comics, he's really like pure comedic relief. Like, this guy is the class very, clown.
Very bombastic.
Yeah, he's a bit of a joker. There's a great kind of bromance between him and Sam that is always sort of fun to explore. But Sam is always the one that's got a little bit more heart and is a little bit more grounded. And so I was really taken in with them using Roberto as this kind of angle of approach to explore this. And I'm curious how much deeper we're going to go into it and the fallout from it, because they really do just like bait and switch us so hard going from that moment of tolerance, of acceptance, of relief at all the anxiety. I think that all of us can relate, whether we're you know, LGBTQ people or not. We can all relate to having to tell somebody something that we're afraid to say, and that fear that builds up inside of us before you sit down in the room. And I love the way they go through the whole sequence of like Jubilee's giving him the advice, but he's just gonna go in and rip the band-aid right off. Mm-hmm. Just gotta lay it all out on the table, and to have her accept it and accept him and say like, I've always accepted you, I'm always gonna love you. That's the half of it that feels so empowering, but the optics, and it really does embody so much of what we're kind of exploring this season. Another one of these characters that's kind of hung in the background a lot is Beast, and the Beast and Trish Tilby dynamic. That was another way that we kind of explore optics and like kind of what matters on this grand visual stage. But your note of kind of rooting the show in the 90s, I love the little line Bastion has, you guys have been failing at this since 92, is kind of like a great callback. But 1997, like, God, shows like Will and Grace were just coming on the air. This is the moment of like Ellen DeGeneres kind of like coming out and like the first kind of lesbian kiss on air on network television. It was a real time of like social change, it felt like, at least for me as a teenager, and a very different landscape that we're dealing with today. So the way that they're approaching this, it just feels so, so, so powerful.
Yeah, I mean, also comparing that to like the Rodney King riots and everything as well, as kind of like having this parallel to what the mutants are going through. Like, we are tired of being subjugated. We are tired of being unheard. And, you know, as Beast quotes MLK, like, you know, riots are the language of the unheard. Like, that is so powerful and so like, and so just, and had to have these people, everyone from, you know, President Kelly to Trish being like, well, you know, you guys can't. Right, like, that's not right. I mean, yeah, that's easy for you to say from the outside looking in, but you can't relate to what we're going through because you're not us. Like, you are not going through the same things we're going through, and you can't tell us how to react and how to feel in this moment, and how that, and how we release our pain, and how we release our, you know, frustration of being unheard, of being looked over time and time again. Like, as President Kelly's talking to Scott, he's just like, yeah, you know, I can't be seen, like, you know, really doing too much. I can just see the thoughts and prayer tweet from President Kelly. If this was, you know, the now times in that timeline, my thoughts and prayers with the mutants. But what are you going to do to show that you stand with us? Like, are you going to do anything to say, this is wrong, this is immoral, this is just not something that we should be doing? No, he's not going to, as President Kelly, you know, takes out the rescue efforts, showing that we don't care that much about finding your people alive because you're less than human to us.
You know, invoking Rodney King feels really powerful just because, again, the cyclical nature, like going back to everything that Magneto said in episode 2 and doubling down on kind of Beau DeMaio's tweets last week, him like coming out of this social media blackout of the way that the 90s felt like an optimistic time, but the reality of how we're just like in the same cycle, right? Like Rodney King, George Floyd, like, how many times do we have to say never again? At what point do we have to like actually respond to a change? And much to everything that kind of Kevin said on the podcast the other day about the fact that, like, you know, the status quo, the people in power, they're never going to feel good about you protesting acceptably the right ways to kind of protest and affect change. The other thing that really strikes me about the Rodney King of it all, and it's something that I think the X-Men have captured so well over their sort of tenure in comic books, is this notion that Rodney King, by just his circumstance in the moment, you know, he was subjected to police brutality. He was put on the news, and he gives this soundbite, can't we all just get along? And Rodney King was not a public speaker, right? This was just like an average man, a citizen trying to live his life. And he gets kind of like really picked apart and lambasted. But the notion, Jason, that, you know, you don't have a choice to like stand up and become a civil rights activist or advocate in that way. The circumstances kind of drive you into what this is. And the idea that all of the mutants, whether they're opting in or not, whether they're choosing to like participate in this or not, by the very nature of their existence, they're being pushed into this forum of debate about ethics, about what is right, about change and the ways to affect change. And that we all have like kind of different toolkits to embody that, and the ways that you have to kind of force yourself to fit in that like square peg round hole situation, how kind of difficult it is to try to rise to the occasion, if that makes sense. I don't know if I'm like capturing the words effectively, but
yeah, I mean, it's almost being forced into being a political advocate. Like, what side are you going to fall down on? Are you going to take this moment and run with it, or are you going to fall back and, you know, just hope that people forget about you and forget about your circumstances? Or are you going to rise up and try and make change? Like you said, Rodney King, Rosa Parks, people that were just trying to live their lives had these things thrust upon them, and what they did with it after that was their choice, and was whether or not they didn't feel like they were going to be a moment of change, but that's what they were thrust into, which is interesting about how they plan to go with it. I mean, the mutants were like, we were trying to go to Genosha because y'all freaking hated us so much. We were trying to get off your stuff, just enjoy our own moment, our own paradise. Y'all couldn't even let us have that. So that again is another like touchstone of a moment for them. It's just like, How much do we have to take? We tried to even leave, and y'all wouldn't let that happen. Y'all had to, not y'all, but you know, whoever, quote unquote, whoever's behind this,
right.
who, you know, the public at large thinks is Bolivar Trask, is like, y'all just gonna let us have our paradise, our moment away from y'all, is such an interesting like thing to be faced with. And how do we react to an attack, literally an attack to us? And President Kelly, everyone else just wants us to sit back and kind of shrug, like, oh, well, I guess another attack against our people. What are we going to do? But, you know, I think it's a very interesting tack to take about how are the X-Men, who are the poster children of mutants in this world, going to react and what they're going to do. And I think the Rogue part of this is a very interesting way to see how this type of injustice and how this type of attack can change you and can make, and how it makes you feel and what it makes you do in a way.
Oh, yeah. It's, you know, it's this notion of privilege, like we were talking about with Kevin the other day, and the idea that, like, there is not an option for some of these folks. But to your point of the kind of Rogue angle of this episode, I'm such like a Rogue stan. I've really kind of loved that she's getting her moment in the sun this season. It's pretty dominant, the kind of Rogue Remy relationship in the center of it. But her emotional response to everything that we got, I mean, we get this confrontation with Cap that I was kind of surprised didn't go to blows, and I appreciated that it didn't away, but we're right up on the edge of like ACAB stuff, right? Where she's like, oh, America's top cop. She's going to throw the shield. Cap again, talking about the optics. Like, I can't go down there in my suit and go busting heads in Mexico City just because it's the right thing to do. Him kind of inferring, like, once we get the T's crossed and the I's dotted, I can roll out with my team to help you. Very notably in the comics, there were a couple of these runs with like Captain America and the Unity Squad, which were like this convergence of X-Men and Avengers and stuff like this, dealing with issues kind of exactly like this. And as the MCU at large is kind of pushing towards a convergence, we know we have like Secret Wars coming as the kind of next series of arcs. There's a lot of speculation about Avengers versus X-Men stuff. This all just felt so kind of loaded and charged in terms of the potential, but also just the fun of watching it at the moment of like, oh my gosh, what are we going to deal with here? Like Cap versus Rogue, and Rogue with the kind of moral high ground of, okay, Captain America, you know, you always are going to do the right thing, except this time where your hands are tied. All right, buddy boy.
Yeah, the Cap character is interesting to view as a whole, because I think Captain America is one of those heroes that his symbol gets perverted by a lot of people.
Oh yeah.
You know, that claim to fight for justice in America. But, you know, Cap has leaned toward, you know, in comics and in other media, has leaned toward, you know, the left side of things more often than not. Like, it's leaned toward the right side of things to certain people, but other people use this as a symbol of America, who have probably never even picked up a comic book or seen anything Captain America related, who he's always usually fighting for justice, fighting for what's right. And there's also been moments in Captain America comics and other Captain America media where he's realized that he has been wrong in the way he's thought. He's learned things. We have to remember that after, you know, Cap wasn't Cap very long before he got into the ice. You know, he has lessons to learn. So I think that's always been an interesting perspective to the Cap character. This version of Cap is kind of like the Boy Scout version of Cap, who's like, oh, I am very pro-government. Mm-hmm. I can only do what's asked of me from the government. I think that's very, I don't think we're going to get more into the Cap of in these series. I think it's probably our only cameo of Cap. I mean, that's kind of, it's kind of whack that this is our only like version of Cap here, other than the flashback version from the 90s cartoon.
yeah,
which was in the terrible season, the last season of the show
with the bad animation.
Yeah, the animation was wonky. So that's the interesting version of Cap to get here, of the like, no, I'm purely pro-government, I'm purely what I can only, I know this is wrong, but I can't, I have to keep my hands folded and do nothing. I love that Rogue just yeeted his shield out of nowhere. Like, I love to see like a cut scene of Cap just walking through the mountain trying to find his shield.
Like
where the hell did that thing go? It's like,
There's this great beat in like the Ultimate X-Men comics where the Hulk rips Wolverine in half and throws like half of his body over the Himalayas. And like, I always just think about like Wolverine's torso, like dragging himself back to his legs. And it very much made me think of that, of like Cap having to wander up into the mountains. I kind of liked it because it wasn't like, you know, she doesn't throw it at him. She doesn't start the fight, though she makes it clear, like, F you, buddy, like go kick rocks, you know. This Cap voice being done by Josh Keaton, who does the Cap voice in What If, it really kind of struck me in like watching it back how much he almost sounded like Obama, Jason. That, like, I don't know if I'm like putting that there.
I was getting a tinge of black. I was like, who is this guy? Like, he sounds like almost sounds like a black guy. Like, who is this?
It was like the cadence and the delivery. There just was this like certitude to it. And I was like, I wonder how like intentional that is, because there's something, at least for me, so kind of calming and reassuring about
very soothing, very political in a way. And it's like, and you know, Josh Keaton, I think, was also one of the Spider-Men in a cartoon. I think it was the Spectacular Spider-Man.
I think that's correct.
But yeah, it was very official, very political, very soothing. You can see why he would be a spokesperson for America in a way. I did enjoy the tones that he was hitting with this voice acting.
It's a really good setup. And I love the point that you're making, which I think is what's so fun about Captain America, is this idea of him as a character that grows and changes, that he went into the ice when he was a pretty young man and he comes out still kind of impressionable and able to be affected, that he much more embodies the ideals of like America rather than the like bureaucracy of it. Right. Again and again and again, we see that notion that he realizes the powers that be, the people in the office, are less important than the ideas of like liberty and freedom. And I think it's so embodied perfectly in kind of Civil War, and that notion that he's like on the side or anti-registration in terms of his perspective, right? It's a really interesting setup, and it is a little bit of like, gosh, it leaves you wanting more, knowing that this is probably all we're gonna get when he's like alluding to some Avengers showing up. But it was very cool to see him there, and I thought this was a pretty good use of the character. Because you can't divorce the fact that the guy is the American flag, and that while America like stands for a lot of good ideals, that flag has also been used, like most symbols, as a touchstone to do a lot of damage across the way too, like when the wrong people are wielding it at the wrong moments in time. So there's just like so much more stuff really with this episode. We haven't talked much about like the bastion of it all, and like the Magneto survived. What's your interest there? Like, how you feeling about Bastion being the kind of reveal at the top of the food chain here?
I was honestly mad at closed captioning this episode, because closed captioning revealed who Bastion was before we actually saw that it was Bastion and got Riley introduced to him. Because as he's like killing Guy Rich, it has the Bastion on the bottom of the screen as the character's like, okay, it's Bastion. Okay, cool. Now, I don't have a lot of I don't have a lot of background with Bastion. I wasn't reading comics around the time in Bastion, you know, premiere. Mm-hmm. I've seen Bastion in other comic iterations. I think Second Coming was a big Bastion story, as well as Hope was coming into the picture, who was like almost the Second Coming of Jean Grey and all that. Mm-hmm. So that was my introduction of Bastion, but so I didn't really get a lot of his origin. To me, this doesn't really mean, Bastion doesn't really mean so much to me, where I'm like, I saw Bastion on the screen, I was like, oh my god, it's Bastion. Mm-hmm. But I think it'll be interesting as I was reading up on like more of who Bastion is, and we're going to kind of be getting into, I think, a little bit of more timey-wimey travel stuff, some future stuff maybe, as we get a little Nimrod in there with what's going on. And I'm so curious if Bastion is the last stop that we're going to be on in this villain train. I think you and Kev have been, you know, intimating that, you know, you think maybe Apocalypse is behind all this. And that has always been my thought too. I mean, honestly, because we've seen so much of Apocalypse in opening credits and all that. So I'm just still wondering if Bastion is even still just a puppet of Apocalypse at the end of the day, whether that's going to be, I could see that being like a final episode of the season reveal, and Apocalypse being a bigger part of season two, maybe. I could definitely see that being the case, but I think it's interesting what Bastion, who hasn't gotten a lot of exposure in the mainstream, I think, how that's going to come about in this series.
Yeah, that's kind of what struck me. You know, I came away from the episode asking Kevin, like, I kind of had the impression that there might be more to this like council of villains than just Sinister and Bastion, the idea that there might be somebody above them. And I wouldn't be surprised to see it kind of unfold till we get to Apocalypse. Bastion's interesting, right? I mean, he's one of these like weirdo comic villains that like goes through the Siege Perilous. Nimrod usually like stands out to me a little bit more, because the Sentinel Sentinels have always just been such foils to the X-Men, and Nimrod is the actual dangerous Sentinel that feels like it poses a risk at times. But I guess what struck me about this rollout of Bastion is that it feels kind of cool in the notion that we need more villains, right? This is part of like the Marvel problem, period. It's like they're, you know, while even some of their best movies, like they have kind of lackluster villains. There's only a handful that really deliver. I think it's part of why the fandom gets so hype about Dr. Doom and the way that we may roll him out, right? So the idea of like, you know, building Bastion up to be more than he ever has been in the comics, that feels good. And the introduction of him, the rollout, this whole like Theo James voice, the Reservoir Dogs, like I'm gonna do a weird Mr. White like shaving you dynamic.
Yeah, it was so quirky, right? Yeah,
it's like, very it's weird
way to introduce him, and he's just kind of like this almost a psychotic, you know, cybernetic type of futuristic villain. Was such an interesting turn to take with him. I really enjoyed what we got of him in the little bit that we did get of him in this episode.
No, exactly. I mean, it just feels so kind of like off-putting, and I can't help but go back to the Reservoir Dogs of it all. I know like friend of the podcast, Josiah, had mentioned it in our Discord, but I just thought of it immediately because that movie was so kind of 90s in a certain way, but it's very kind of dark and macabre, and the purple people eater of it all. It's really, it feels dangerous. This guy feels scary in the way that the Joker feels scary in a Batman comic, right? I'm a little bit like, oh God, like I don't know where he's going to draw these lines. And I am very curious as to whether or not there will be like somebody above the food chain here. We're obviously going to play with some time travel and the Bishop and the Cable of it all is a whole nother element that we could talk about a bit. But I'm really curious if there's somebody above Bastion. That said, I like that we have rolled this guy out, and I hope that they can like build him into a bit of an intimidating villain across whatever they're going to do with him here in 97.
Yeah, I like the term that he's a little bit psychotic, right? I mean, sinister psychotic in a, I mean, you know, sinister way, but not psychotic serial killer like this guy seems to be. This guy seems to enjoy, you know, playing with his food in a way, playing with his victims in a way, which is a great turn I love for this character. But I'm definitely excited to see what's going on. I think this three-part finale is going to be mostly Bastion focused. But like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if the last turn we get is that he was somehow sent or controlled by Apocalypse.
I mean, there's just so much more across these episodes, but what else has really leapt out at you in terms of the season so far?
I think I've enjoyed everything. I've enjoyed the side characters we get. Morph is really getting me, because every time he's one of the, like, I saw Quicksilver, so I was like, Quicksilver's here. I was like, oh no, it's Morph. Like I'm not used to it because Morph wasn't used, you know, that much in the original series. I think the morphing of Morph from the X-Men animated series to this with his, you know, the plain white face has been so interesting, because that's the comic look of Morph, and they really haven't given us a big Morph character moment yet, and I hope it's coming with all the sinister of everything coming up in the next three episodes. We see this opening credits sequence of Morph being, you know, kind of tortured by Sinister in a way, that the visions of Sinister. So I'm hoping we get more of Morph's story coming up in these three episodes, because I'm really curious to know if there's a reason that he's gone, you know, full white baldy face. I think that could be a fun character moment, but I really enjoy what Morph brings. I when he was like what's the Lady Deathstrike Yuriko. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, Yuriko's here in one of the other episodes. Like, oh no, it's Morph again. Dang, he keeps getting me.
The one that really got me was in episode 3 of that Fire Made Flesh, where he goes to Ilyana and he's got the sword. Ilyana Rasputin, just one of my favorites. But the sword is really what threw me, where I'm like, wait a minute, how did he like create the soul sword out of nowhere?
And like they're giving Ilyana development they haven't even shown us in the X-Men animated series. I'm like, did we miss something? Did we go to limbo in between the animated series in 97? Series,
it's such like a wink and a nod that we get Ilyana and the Dark Child. I know me and Todd the librarian were like wigging out of like, please just put her on the show, you could tell this whole story. I mean I think it's a very clever use of Morph in terms of the showrunners, like as just as a deployment to get to sneak in all these Easter eggs of these other characters. Bo DeMeo like tweeted this week that like, okay, so Morph can replicate the abilities of other mutants when those abilities are like physically related, so it could like replicate Wolverine's hearing or like like Quicksilver speed in that way. And I guess Ilyana's sword, but like not like the psychic abilities of an Xavier or a Jean or something like that. That said, Morpheus like seems wildly powerful in this new iteration. And this was something Josh and I talked about a lot, where I really hope they do dig in as we get into the sinister stuff of this finale, because it's a little bit like, you know, this is the albatross around Morph's like neck from all the way back to like season one of Sinister as this villain that like maybe they can overcome in a big way.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what they bring into that. I mean, and talking about like making the characters like, you know, like a morph and overpowered in a way because he can replicate all these abilities. I mean, this is the same company that recently, you know, spoiler alert for Nightcrawler and Mystique and all, but basically recently made Mystique Nightcrawler's father, basically. She's like, she can manipulate her genes to be able to impregnate someone that birthed Nightcrawler. So in a world where we're having that type of thing, I don't think we're supposed to think about it too hard, but it is something interesting to think about, like how Morph can do all these, because I think, you know, in the previous anime series, just like he can look like these people, he can replicate Wolverine's claws if he wants, but this is replicating powers at this point. So I think that'll be very interesting to see where we're going to go with that. And I'm hyped to see where this. I'm bummed that we're only getting 10 episodes of this.
I know,
that we can't have these big character focused episodes, because you know when in the, you know, 90 in the X-Men animated series where you got these all this we're really able to drill down on people and their motivations and the reasons they're doing things. I don't think we have that here, but we do have that, all that backstory of all of our other characters, but Morph never really got that. So I'm definitely waiting for that with bated breath.
Yeah, for sure. The word on the street. So Beau DeMeo like did and completed work on season two. They're already greenlit and going ahead with it. Disney saying that they really like the reception. It's gotten a great reception. They want to do more seasons of this. They're looking to like get into a cadence to be able to roll them out faster, so there's not kind of 2 years between seasons every time. So fingers crossed. Let's see like where it goes from here. But I hope that they find a little bit of confidence to like do some more robust seasons with this. I think like part of my kind of perpetual frustration with this new age of the streaming services and television are these mini seasons, these 8-episode runs and these 10-episode runs that feel like you have so much story that you could tell here, but we're just kind of racing at a breakneck speed through half of it. And I think part of what's been so excellent about these 97 episodes is how well they're able to kind of thread the needle and run the gambit, pun intended, I guess, of each like kind of 40 minutes. Like they're packing a lot of story into each of these, and really effectively. I don't think they're losing a ton. That said, I think it'd be great if we could get to like a 16 episode season, even if we're not back to like the 23 episodes in the Halcyon days of yore. I feel you there. What else? I mean, there's like plenty for us to dive into, but what else has been jumping out at you?
So we've got Magneto back. Magneto's not dead.
No.
Where is Gambit? Is Gambit gone? Is he gone? Are we going to get Gambit back by the end of this series, whether it be through Sentinel Resurrection, where we have to revert him back to his normal self, whether it be through time travel, where we're not actually going to make the destruction of Genosha happen? Are we getting Gambit back? What is the outlook for this season coming up, for the rest of the season?
Yeah, I mean, the Magneto thing felt like pretty telegraphed. Like, if you know that Leech is with him and he's getting hit. It seems pretty clear that, like, Gambit's dead, capital D dead. But also with the Apocalypse speculation, it felt very easy to be like, oh, yeah, we're going to get a death Gambit. Gambit. Let's do that again. But now that we're dealing with the Prime Sentinels, I think you nailed it. I mean, there have been these horror elements to the season. We got the first touch of it with that sinister Madeline Pryor episode there in episode 3, and I think we're getting like Trask reanimating at the end of this. That was terrifying, Jason. Yes, like he was pure nightmare fuel. He's kicking the snot out of these guys. I talked about it with Kevin, but the fact that Rogue can like body everything that's coming at her, and then Trask just lays her out like that, like no problem.
Her and Jean. Yeah.
Yeah. Then he goes toe-to-toe with Jean Grey, which is like, oh boy, this is officially scary. So the idea of Gambit, which I can't help but even just think of like the color palettes of it all, that Prime Sentinel had like the techno-organic virus, but purple, which is a bit like Gambit's marquee color. Like I could see it, the version where Rogue's got to fight the undead nightmare version of Gambit at the end that's like wrecking the entire team. That feels like very powerful and possible in terms of where we're arcing. You know?
Yeah, I'm kind of conflicted because the way Gambit went out was such a badass way for a character to go out.
Yeah.
It was such a great, you know, such a great send off for Gambit. I almost don't want to take it back, but I also don't want to miss out on more Gambit in my life. Like I love that character. And I hate when shows take back deaths. I usually do. But I think in this case, I can let it go. I didn't even think about it as well when we were talking about deaths. I had forgotten that, you know, Madeline Pryor was at Genosha and that she was dead.
Yeah.
But they really kind of one off mentioned that in this episode. I was like, oh yeah, Madeline's freaking dead too. I forgot all about that. But to undo death in a big way like this, I think would be cheap, but I also can't be too bad at it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel you. I think that it's like built into the comic thing to a degree, but I do feel like it would rob a lot of power. And you know, we talked a bit about, it's literally the one for one line at the end of episode 5 there of Rogue, like, I can't feel you. And she's echoing the line that Wanda gives to Vision. And so I think in this way, we could play those beats again pretty effectively. The idea of like a Rogue having to dispatch the Sentinel Prime Gambit and that being like the potential true death, at least for maybe like half of like a season 2 or whatever until we bring it back. I think that we really undercut what we did this season a lot if Gambit's like upright and well by the end of episode 10. But I think it could be really powerful kind of finale if Rogue's got to like put him down again, and we have to like go through all this closure only to like circle back around on him at some point in the distant future, as it were.
Yeah, and I'm also curious about what the plan is with Magneto and what Bastion's going to do. I can see Bastion setting Magneto up to make it look like he's going back to his terroristic roots by loading him up with something, making him, you know, go crazy or making a big spectacle out of Magneto. I'm also curious. I'm very curious about how that's going to come about and what you think maybe the plan is for Magneto.
Yeah, to the optics of it all, right? As I think that you so poignantly identified, it feels to me like a lot of this OZT Bastion maneuvering is to turn public sentiment against the mutants, right? To like create a couple of these like big overt like things. Just the destruction of Genosha has created this immediate reaction where the mutants' closest political allies, like a Kelly, are all of a sudden like, yeah, I understand that like a genocide just happened, but like the optics, Scott, the optics, I can't like double down on helping you. Trish is like saying the quiet part out loud of like, yeah, we feel really bad that this tragedy has happened, but now we're also very scared of you and we're afraid of how you're going to react because we realize that this catastrophic injustice has been put upon you in this way. So it feels, to your point, spot on, like the idea of taking somebody as kind of emblematic, as symbolic as Magneto, don't make me disappoint you, United Nations, to send him out with like all the pomp and circumstance and fanfare of let's watch him now tear apart your human cities and like create untold destruction will very quickly turn public sentiment against the mutants and validate all of our worst fears. Like, look, they are inhuman. They are all terrorists. They are unable to be managed in any kind of way, which justifies the response that we're looking for. It seems like that's the maneuver for sure.
Yeah, I can even see there being like a plot where we get like a squad of Bastion turned heroes, like a Gambit. Like maybe we do see Madeline. She's been turned in that way.
Yep.
We see a Magneto, like this kind of squad of horsemen, if you will, for Apocalypse. If we see that, because I mean, for those characters to go out so soon into this new version of the X-Men, you know, anime series, I think it's a little premature. So I do think we're going to be getting those characters back in a way. I mean, we kind of left Madeline and Scott's story hanging a little bit, so I wouldn't be surprised if we see her come back at a certain point. So I'm just very like curious about what we're going to get in these last 3 episodes.
Yeah, that whole notion, I mean, you're very much like touching on some Dark Reign stuff with like Norman Osborn's Dark Avengers, and like I could really see that. The fact that they can like just about roster a full team of actual like recognizable X-Men feels pretty dangerous for sure. So I mean as we're like building all this stuff up, we got the Deadpool and Wolverine coming, we got the little bit of like a bee stinger at the end of the Marvels. Like, what's your greater speculation for the MCU here, Jason? I'm just kind of curious, do you feel like we're pushing to a place where it is going to be like a kind of Avengers versus X-Men maneuver? I know that there is even, you know, when we look at like an X-Men cameo in a movie called The Marvels, and with Rogue being so kind of prominent this season, I can't help but think about the Carol Danvers Rogue mm-hmm. connections and kind of what that means going forward. Some of the speculation around Secret Wars has been this idea of like a champion for each world that has to kind of fight to protect that world against the incursions. I'm talking about a lot of like greater MCU ideas here, but I'm just curious like where your head is in terms of all of this stuff at this point.
I mean, whether we get a official Avengers versus X-Men movie or event, it seems inevitable that at some point, much like any superhero property, when superheroes meet each other for the first time, intentions are going to be misread and we're going to have to fight each other at some point. So you can definitely see, you know, a Falcon Cap going against a Cyclops or something like that. You can definitely see that coming in our future. I'm very pumped for it. And with the whole, you know, we have the incursions, we have the TVA of it all with the different timelines, different branches of time or whatever that may have you with Monica Rambeau hopping into another reality where they're X-Men. There are so many avenues that we can go down to getting our X-Men, to getting multiple versions of X-Men. I have no clue what they're going to do, but I'm definitely pumped to see it. And to see Beast in all of his CGI glory in the Marvels was fantastic. It was something I didn't see coming. To see Charles Xavier, you know, yellow hover wheelchair and all in Doctor Strange and Multiverse of Madness, you know, that's one of the lower points of the MCU, according to many people. For me, that was one of the sequences of the MCU, was that whole Scarlet Witch versus the alternate universe Avengers was one of the better sequences of the MCU, period. So just to see all those things coming forward in this way, you know, it's been a long wait for the X-Men, because it's been how many years since we announced the X-Men are coming to the MCU?
Yep.
And to have them kind of trickled in like this, I think we've all wanted to be like, no, I want them now. But I think the strategy that they're moving forward with bringing them in like at a very slow pace has actually been a pretty good one. To see Wolverine in his yellow suit and all, and to not for it to be, and to actually work, like to actually work, like I see it and it works for me. The yellow suit works. I think the fright of all the X-Men movies was that it was going to look hokey, it was going to look awful, was kind of, you know, done away with when we saw it in the trailer. Like, no, this works. This looks good. And I'm so pumped for how the X-Men are going to come in. I have no idea how exactly they're going to come in, but I'm here for it all.
Yeah, I'm of a similar mindset. I'm just so excited. And, Kevin and I talked about it a little bit, that I think it's been kind of fortunate for them that they've done this slow rollout over the last couple of years. It feels like the timing is good for them now. And I'm so with you where there is like real fear to kind of put these guys in their ridiculous bright rainbow colored costumes, the bright yellow Wolverine. It could easily go very sideways. But over the course of the last 20 years, we've seen what good comic book adaptations look like and bad comic book adaptations look like, right? 100%. And in that way, it really is awesome to just get to see the full circle moment of like, holy cow, an R-rated Wolverine with Hugh Jackman playing him for a kind of like potential send-off after Logan. Logan's an awesome movie and I love it, but it's really sad, right? I mean, it's like a very like down note to say goodbye to some of these characters on. So in this way, it feels like really exciting, and I feel as optimistic about the MCU as I ever have. I'm very excited to see what the rollout looks like. And I guess we will see over the next couple of months. I certainly will be in your ear. I'm going to give you a call as we close in on this Deadpool Wolverine, because I'm going to want to talk to you again about the greater MCU at large and Deadpool Wolverine in particular. But I'm so glad to have had you in here this week to kind of talk through some of the X-Men 97. Is there anything else you want to know before we kind of part ways for this week, Jason? Anything that we haven't hit yet, because it really has been such a season.
Yeah, no, I think we hit on all of the big moments I wanted to talk about. I think we're good there. I'm excited to have been able to get everything off my chest to talk to people that know more, that know about these things. You know, I can look at my daughter and my wife and be like, wasn't that cool? And they'd be like, yeah, I guess. But to have people to actually have a discourse with again is really fun and really great. I had a really great time breaking it all down with you. I'm 100% excited and 100% down for coming on here talking about Wolverine, Deadpool, anything else you want to talk about, I'm here for it.
Excellent. We will definitely hear from you again, my friend. You're busy out there. You've been keeping busy like many of our PSR alumni. You're out there hustling on these lean, mean internet streets. Where are you at? Where can people find you?
Yeah, so I've recently teamed up with a fellow PSR alum, Marissa Garza. We're talking about, we started a podcast called The Good Pod. We're talking about all of the Robert Michelle King shows, The Good Wife, The Good Fight. We're also, right now, we started out with Elsbeth, which is another spinoff of that show about a particular character. So come and check us out on The Good Pod. We're having a lot of fun breaking down the show. So you can check us out there. Also, actually, this week was the finale of Married at First Sight, which is a show I talk about with my co-host Asia Welch over on the Perfect Match Pod. So this season's over. We will be coming back next season. But if you watch those type of shows, if you watch Married at First Sight, it's a really fun show. We have a really lot of silly times, silly tangents on that show. So come on down there if you want to hear me talk about that. Also, if you're into 90 Day Fiancé, this week I was also on the 90 Day Fiancé wrap up with Puya over on the Rob Has Podcast Network. So many places you can check me out if you want to hear me. Want to see me, all those places you can go. For now, on Twitter, you can find me on JAYR1085. That's where I muse about all types of nonsense stuff.
You should go follow him there on Twitter to keep up with all the stuff that he's doing. You're keeping very busy out there on the internet. Screen and Page, we're doing our thing. We dropped a Fallout binge pod. I got together with Austin Smith last week. So if you're just kind of getting caught up and finishing that season of Fallout that dropped on Amazon Prime, we got a nice fat podcast covering the whole season, full spoilers waiting out there for you. Myth and Legends or Wheel of Time book club. We're halfway through book one of The Eye of the World, the first book in Robert Jordan's epic fantasy series, The Wheel of Time. Never a better time to start reading them right now. You can get caught up with us. We're dropping in every couple of weeks as we are reading sections of that book. Of course, I'll be back next week with Kevin breaking down episode 8 of X-Men 97. But until then, just remember,
it was a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater.
One-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater.
A one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater sure looks strange to me.
One-eyed.
Oh, really came down to earth and he lit in a tree. I said, Mr. Purple.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes.
Ch-ch-chumba.
ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy.
The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck. I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse. With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything. Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business. Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot. Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me. Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com. Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.